Welcome to the How to Change a Million Lives Virtual Summit, brought to you today by the Public Speakers Association. I'm so excited to introduce to you the incredible Mr. Fox Meyer. Fox, would you take it from here?
Thank you, Tanya, and hello, everybody. Changing a million lives, it seems quite difficult. Today, I am going to attempt to do that by telling you my story. And within my story, you might hear a lot of pain, but take this from my story. Turn your pain into inspiration. So here we go. It's a little something I call scars. It is 6 a.m. and the alarm clock on my mini iPad goes off. I want to punch it. It's a gift from my Somerset Patriots family, and I know that its alarm clock, it's not its primary intended use. So I hit snooze twice in the next 10 minutes. And then I hear Coach Tanner's voice in my head. He says, off your butt and on your feet, gotta get up so we can eat. Eventually, I oblige, and I begin to put my right foot on the ground. As I do this, I see a scar on my leg that goes from my hip almost down to my knee. It's also on my left leg, and it is product of a 1984 and 1988 hip osteotomy surgery, in which my surgeon, Dr. Harold M. Dick, inserted two metal rods in my hips, breaking the bones, all in an attempt that I'd walk less knock-kneed. Well, I put my left leg on the ground, and the first thing that happens is my knees kiss together for the first of many times this day. I look down and say, boy, you boys would be a really nice prom date. Captive of my body, this thing has got me. Sitting here in this chair, and so begins the unfair. Thought so by some, blind, deaf, and dumb. Did he hear that sound, and how is he getting around? Listen. My crossed eyes gave me x-ray vision in disguise. My first ectomy to my last otomy. My scars are my gift. Don't stare, Mom said that. What's he looking at? You see, it's in that split second you form your perception. Come on over and patronize. You've been put down to size. Your high words won't work because it's the truth, you jerk. Listen, my crossed eyes gave me x-ray vision in disguise. From my first ectomy to my last otomy, my scars are my gift. I begin to walk to the bathroom to shower. I pick my feet up, just high enough up off the ground, not to trip and fall flat on my face. And each step carries with it a memory. This time, it's a few days post-hip osteotomy surgery, and my legs are bandaged, not casted yet, from my ankles to my hips. Surgeon comes in and says, Fox, it's time to put weight on your feet. With my dad holding me from behind, I take my first steps post-surgery. While it is very hard to describe the pain that comes with each step, it is impossible to describe the euphoria of walking again. I enter the bathroom, and I climb into the shower, holding on to things more than gently as I get in because I've had a lot of tumbles in my life, and today I want to keep my teeth. I begin to bathe, and I see all my scars, and each one carries with it a memory. Hamstring transfer, heel cord extension, hip osteotomy, testicle removal, chest tube. I turn off the shower. I towel off and I climb out of the shower again. This time, again, holding on to things more than gently because I've had a lot of tumbles in my life and I want to keep my teeth. I groom myself. And the last thing that I do is I put contact lenses into my eyes. And I'm reminded when I do this that I cannot focus on a single object with both eyes at the same time. Product of being cross-eyed at birth. playing baseball at grandmother's house and a few surgeries in between. I step back from the mirror. It's 6:30 in the a.m., and the snooze has become my friend. Soon I see myself in the mirror. He looks back at me and says, "Have you done all you can do, and are you ready for what is to come? Are you thankful for all you have been given, as would say, decent son? Do you realize responsibility that comes with the pleasure of success? You must be a man of integrity to always be at your best. And no matter there are no cameras and that you are alone under this roof, you could hide sometimes from the outside world, but me, the mirror, guess what? I always see the truth." I walk out of the bathroom and toward the bedroom to get dressed. Each step carries with it a memory. This time, it's a few days post-hamstring transfer surgery. With my body sliced, I lie in a hospital bed. My surgeon, Dr. Roy Abnuzzo, walks into the room dressed in plaid from head to toe, and he's doing all these weird coordination exercises like patting his head while rubbing his stomach and vice versa. And while he's doing this, he asks me, "Fox, how are you doing?" "Good." I have never told a bigger lie in my life, but I said, "Yeah, Doc, I'm doing great." I begin to get dressed. As a general rule, this takes me 4 times as long as it does for the average bear. No big deal, but the hardest part, however, is putting on and tying my shoes. I do this with my left foot with hardly any problems, but my right foot is much harder. As I begin to do this, I look to my right into a parking lot, and I see my neighbor bend down on one knee and tie his shoe in 2 seconds flat. I sigh, I look to my left, and I can picture my mother telling me as a kindergartner, "Fox, you have CP, you walk funny, that's it, get over it." Blunt and to the point, but in that moment, I see my mother's point. I can't help but think about the millions of people in this world who have it harder than me for millions of reasons. Take Andre, for instance. Andre was my roommate, Children's Specialized Hospital, in 1990, during rehab. At 21 years old, Andre was given a motorcycle for his 21st birthday. He took it out for a spin with no helmet on. He spun out, and the first thing he hit was his head. So in those days in 1990, Andre stood in front of me, 21 years old, without any access to his long-term or short-term memory, and was prone to violent and profane mood swings, many of them directed toward his own mother. For example, one day she would walk in and he'd be all lovey-dovey, kissing on her and hugging on her the entire day. The next day, his mother would be locked from the room, and Andre would point at her and ask me, Who is this B-I-T-C-H trying to enter the room?" He was also Jerry. At 16 years old, Jerry went on his bicycle in the middle of the day in Manhattan in New York City out to get groceries for his mother when he was hit by a drunk cab driver. And like Andre, he lost any access to his long-term or short-term memory and was prone to violent mood swings, many of them directed toward his own mother. So looking at me, sure, I think I can tie my shoe. I do this. I begin to stand up, and yes, my knees kiss together again. I look straight ahead, and I think about how many times during this day the perception of me, a kid, a guy with cerebral palsy, will get mixed with the actual reality of me, a man. I think back to the 7th grade. I'm in PE class, and we're timed running around a track. Back in the locker room, a classmate is going around comparing his times with ours. He gets to me. I begin to say my time. He cuts me off and says, "Fox, you don't count." In this moment, I say, "Don't tell me what I can and cannot do. To my image, I am defiant. What you see is so far from true. I'm a mental giant. I'm frail, built like, and nicknamed Scarecrow. Inside, what a lot do not know. I have been broken and welded so many times, I can't tell you this, no matter how hard I try. Misjudged book and misread cover, I'll tell you what lies under. My toes are curled, and my body it wants to go fetal, because in my life, I have seen so many needles. I pick up my legs to run, like kids do, for fun. But careful, because every step could lead to a tumble, this I can't forget. In front of my face, my eyes, specks for years they can't disguise. My pupils are never in sync. No matter how hard I try and I think, but don't tell me what I can and cannot do. To my image, I am defiant. What you see is so far from true, because I'm a mental giant. I begin to walk again toward the kitchen, and each step carries with it a memory. This time, it's the sound a morphine machine makes, injecting morphine goodness into my sliced body after a surgery. I walk out the door, and the first thing that I have to do to get to my car, which sits in a garage, is go down a flight of stairs that I hate. But again, as I get there, I can't help but think about the millions of people that have it tougher than me for millions of reasons. Take Reggie, for instance. He was my roommate in rehab in 1990. At 14 years old, Reggie stole a car and drove it into a telephone pole. So in those days, Reggie sat in front of me, a paraplegic. There was Michael. At 15 years old, as my roommate, Michael walked into his parents' bedroom at night and said, "Mom, Dad, I have a headache." After that, he passed out. Michael had a brain aneurysm, so he'd lied in front of me, 15 years old, in a diaper, in a coma, unable to move, unable to talk. So yeah, I think I can get down these stairs. I hold on the rails to keep from flying. Man, you know I ain't lying. Sometimes I laugh just to keep from crying. Hips entangled, legs entangled, feet entangled, me so entangled. I get into my car, and I can't see the scars on my legs because I'm wearing a pair of slacks. I back out of my garage. Somewhere along the line, from my garage to my drive to work, I make a left-hand turn. And when I do this, a ball in a baseball glove falls out and begins to bounce around my trunk. That ball reminds me of so many things. Thousands of hours of playing baseball in the backyard with my siblings. Thousands of hours of playing baseball and throwing a ball up in the air at a beach somewhere, off a school somewhere, off a wall in a park somewhere. Over 100 innings pitched in high school. That little white ball in my left arm were the reason why I was so fortunate to throw out a ceremonial first pitch to a New York Yankees game in 1997. That little ball in my left arm somehow, some way, got me to the University of South Carolina, where I spent 5 years as a manager and student coach. In the year 2000, we were SEC champions. And again in 2002, we also appeared in the College World Series. Again, that little white ball in my left arm, and the reason why today I am the bench coach for the Somerset Patriots independent baseball team in the Atlantic League, where in 2008, 9, and 15, we were Atlantic League champions. I am so grateful that throwing a baseball has nothing to do with how quickly I get dressed. Good evening, arena sold out with doubters. I stand before you completely empowered. I'm so excited to hear the volume of deafening silence coming from this room. You have the bat and I have the ball. Double or nothing and once and for all. This battle, it wasn't close. You thought me a loser and you misdiagnosed. I finally pull into the parking lot of my workplace. My mind drifts off. I picture myself sitting on a beach somewhere, and the alarm clock, again, and my iPad mini goes off. It's because, well, I have to go pee. I have two options. I look behind me, I see my parents' beach condo about a quarter mile away. I look in front of me, and I see the ocean. I stand up, my knees kiss together, and I say to myself, well, the whole world's a bathroom. I pull into my parking space, and I get out of my car, left leg first, then right. Each step carries with it a memory. Step, you're idle no more. Step, pick yourself up off the floor. Step, get up out of your seat. Step, you will not lie there in defeat. Step, in mind and body a winning tranquility. Step, without movement there is no possibility. Step, each pace equals a seed. Step, in the world's largest sequoia tree. Step, one by one, they'll amass. Step, Corville passes down victory path. I approach the entrance of the school, and I see myself in the door's reflection. I'm amazed that no matter how old I get, I'm a man 5'8" tall, and I have never bought a pair of pants that actually fit me. I open the door for a couple of female colleagues. I am amazed at how many bags they are carrying, because for me, being without anything is a conscious act of will. And I know the less I have, the more worry-free I am. As I enter the school, negative aspects of my high school experience ring in my head. I hear things like, crippled creep, and you don't look like a senior. I see so many kids trying to be cool. And I know in this moment that regardless of what curriculum I'm ordered to teach, my main job is to make them understand that from the moment they were conceived, my students were genetically designed to be different. So why on earth would they try to act like somebody they're not? Are you trying to stand out, but sure your twin is out there, no doubt? They wear what you wear and they do what you do. Your carbon copy, nothing new. But let me ask you this. Do they have your tone, your heartbeat, your mission? Remember, it's impossible to measure what lies within. With so many similar variables, remember how you were made. So have no fear. Your individuality is saved. I walk past the auditorium and look in it. I know it was a place where in high school, I fell while chasing a girl around that I had a crush on. In this moment, I look at my hands and I think of my therapists, Kathy, Debbie, Jose, Teddy, Mrs. Shumler. You see, they were genius. They knew that in therapy, me as a kid growing up with cerebral palsy, I was going to fall every day of my life. It was inevitable. But 99.9% of my falls were forward. So with them, I always practiced putting my hands out as I fell. So over time, my hands have been there for me. In 1997, when I threw up a ceremonial first pitch to a New York Yankees game, I fell on the top step of the dugout, and my hands were there. In August of that year, as a freshman at the University of South Carolina, walking with my friend Brett, he was inviting me to his family's home for Thanksgiving dinner when I fell forward and my hands were there. In 2002, during the player and coach introductions of the College World Series, again, I fell on the top step of the dugout and my hands were there. I look at my hands again, and I realize this. My life has not been about not trying to fall every day. It's been about always trying to get back up, and that my life has been less about pain and more about beauty. I open the door to my room. And eventually, first period begins. As my students enter the room, I greet them. I look at them and think how much I would like to trade my age for theirs, with one stipulation. I would not want to be as dumb as I was when I was their age. I think back to the seventh grade. I'm in Mrs. Brockett's history class, and I am excused to use the quote-unquote bathroom. Well, I use this time to sneak to my friend Aaron's locker and turn the dial. 7, 17, 24. I open the locker. I go into his wallet and steal $7 just so I could have lunch from the school cafeteria. Retrospect, it always tells the truth. Retrospect, now I see clearly my youth. Retrospect, I was young and I was dumb. Retrospect, or just a kid having fun. Retrospect, dear God, why did I wear that hat? Retrospect, why did I get angry over that? Retrospect, Mom and Dad, this place, I am sick of it. Retrospect, Mom and Dad, you're right. Now, I miss it. Retrospect, I was always looking for something more. Retrospect, now it was simply the time and place that I most adore. Retrospect, time goes by way too fast. Retrospect, I am so glad to still have a past. First period begins. I am a grammarian at heart. Verbs, adverbs, direct object pronouns, indirect object pronouns. But I know in my heart that syntax does not equal intelligence. And right now, it's not working for anybody. We have all been sucked into this technology revolution, including myself. But let me ask you this. What good does it do if you're a student and you Snapchat with somebody in class for the 143rd day in a row? Because you're doing this, know your classmate's name in front of you, or on your left, or on your right. Cell phones, tablets, and notebooks took the world so forcefully it shook. And with all these new technologies to the world were born more bad apologies. Wi-Fi might seem to connect and tie, but it so too began the great divide. Social media looks like a brilliant disguise, but anybody with a soul can read between the lines. Cell phones, tablets, and notebooks took the world so forcefully it shook, and with all these new technologies to the world were born more bad apologies. I step back in the aisle. I slip and fall over a piece of paper, this time on my back. As I roll over, I look at this piece of paper. It's today's assignment. It was due 15 minutes ago. And it's blank. I have to get up, but I want to scream. But how do I show my character? Well, together, and I get up, but I get up slowly. Up for those that can't. People, the early was a day-to-day struggle that went from bad to worse, and the pain doubled. Never far from imminent danger, from the tough and the unforgiving, I was no stranger. The toughness, I had that, and it was plentiful. So I turned my pain into inspiration, and every day I gave it a game face salutation. Hello, tough times. You were just a pit stop to a happy life. Because what's Victory Highway without some struggle and strife? Again, my name's Fox Beyer. If you've liked what you've heard, please email me off my website. It's foxbeyer.com. It's spelled foxbeyer.com. If you email me, I would be glad to send you a copy of my book, Letter Kindling. igniting, inspiring, and evoking the fire within. Many of the poems that you heard are in that book. Also, I would love to speak to your organization or group if you think it would benefit them. Until next time, take good care. Tanya, back to you.